Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, what's going on, everybody? It is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. What the heck am I doing here on a Wednesday? Sal Capaccio with you. Well, that's because the Buffalo Bills have a bye week this weekend. So I'll be on today. You'll get the guys, Derek and Zach, back tomorrow and Friday. As I have a couple days of downtime, but if something happens with the Bills, I'll be available. I'll be around. But in the meantime, today, chance to talk with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show about what's going on with your Buffalo Bills and your Buffalo Sabres. We're going to do some college basketball today. How about that? It's that time of year. You know, it's the bye week. It's the right time of year. It's the right week for this, right? You got the bye week, the team, the Bills just lost. You want to kind of forget about that. Think about the next game in a couple of weeks. But yeah, get that taste out of your mouth. Get the Sabres playing tonight against the Senators, looking for their first win. And we have Major League Baseball going on, NBA preseason about to tip off the season. College basketball about to tip off. We're going to do it all today. Going to have Paul Hamilton join me at 11 a.m. or so. A little bit of a moving target there with Paul with the Sabres schedule, Lindy Ruff talking, and practice. But also today, very, very special treat for you and very excited today for me to talk to a couple of college basketball head coaches getting ready for a big exhibition coming up at KeyBank Center a week from Saturday. University of Buffalo men's head basketball coach George Halkovich III is going to join me at 10:40 a.m. UB taking on Syracuse a week from Saturday at KeyBank Center in an exhibition game. And Syracuse head coach Adrian Autry is going to join me as well at 11:30 a.m. So we got UB head coach George Halkovich. We got Syracuse head coach Adrian Autry. We got Paul Hamilton, head coach Paul Hamilton. I mean, maybe Paul could be a head coach. Paul's going to join me on the Sabres at about 11 a.m. So before we do all that, let's talk a little Buffalo Bills football, shall we? And where this team sits at the bye week. And the clamoring, I mean, even downright demanding for changes to be made by a lot of you out there. 803-0550. What change do you want? I'm just curious on that because I get a lot of these kinds of tweets at Sal Sports, by the way. Shoot me a tweet on X. I get a lot of tweets. We get calls on a reaction show, but mainly through social media, I get a lot of this. And sometimes, you know, because of a certain amount of characters, the way people want to phrase it. And I generally think that, okay, this is the way I look at things. Fans are going to be fans, and that's great. And that's what's great about fans. And fans can be very reactionary and irrational and emotional sometimes. It doesn't mean you're wrong to want, like, hey, say this guy is playing poorly or whatever. But as I like to say on the reaction show, like, you can't just go and start firing everybody after every loss. You can't do that, right? It's not a productive way to run any business or sports organization, and it's not realistic, okay? But at the same time, people want some changes. And sometimes I get a very general statement from people about accountability. You know, when's accountability? What that was one yesterday I got. Where's the accountability? Well, look, what does accountability mean? Accountability means when someone steps up and says, I screwed up, I could be better, I could do something different. That's accountability. And when I heard Sean McDermott and Gerald Brady and Bobby Babich talk yesterday, I think they're accountable. But to you, maybe accountability is, oh no, you need to be fired. So what changes do you want? Do you want new players? You can't blow up the whole roster. Where do you want those new players? How do you want to get them? I like to have reasonable, rational discussions about these things sometimes. And it's not easy because it's not as easy as people think just to make changes like that. If you want to make a trade, great. Who are you trading with? Who's going to give you a guy and what are you giving up, and what's the salary cap implications? Those are things Brandon Bean has to work through. I'm not opposed to making changes. I'm not opposed to bringing in talent, more talent, different people, whatever. There's a lot of things that go into this stuff. Last year, they traded for Amari Cooper, and yeah, it was nice to see, and it was great when it happened. It didn't really work out. He got hurt. He wasn't on the field as much as you wanted him to, and he didn't seamlessly fit in right away, maybe, right, on an offense. There's a lot of things to consider. A couple years ago, you traded for Rasul Douglas. That worked. That worked. That was a great move. Rasul Douglas, he helped immediately. Maybe that's something that you're looking at. You can look at every position. You can look at players and say, well, this guy's not playing well. Okay, what's the answer? You can't just go grab an all-pro from another team. I think sometimes people think there's all-pros just sitting on other teams everywhere, and the Bills are the only team that don't have them. It's not the way it works. Doesn't mean that those players can't be better or can't be upgraded. But what's the process of that? I'm just, and maybe it's coaching. Yes, I know you want, a lot of you want Sean McDermott fired. It's just not happening right now. They're 4-2. They've been through lulls before. That those things are just off the table. They're just unreasonable right now to talk about. You want to talk about it after the season, however it ends? Sure. Even coordinators. Now, they have made changes at coordinator in the past during the season. Just did it 2 years ago to offensive coordinator with Ken Dorsey out and Joe Brady in. I think it's too early for that, but I give that space when people tell me about it or talk about it because they've done it before. Like that could, or something you want. Let's get to the phone lines. 803-0550. Let's hear what you have to say about this here on a Wednesday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Mike in PA, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Sal. Yeah, you know, I really think the Bills got to go out and get a trade. I know they're going to have to give up assets to get this player. If a team's willing to even trade you, we're kind of being reactive now in the wide receiver market instead of proactive and drafting one. But I think we're backed up in a corner, and I think we got to go after a wide receiver. And I know we need a cornerback as well or a safety, but you got to keep Josh involved. I've watched 3 games now where I've seen Josh on the sidelines, and it's becoming a meme where he's sitting there frazzled and just not into the game. And you got to keep him in the right headspace. So that's why I'm going to prioritize wide receiver. Plus, it's more fun when we're scoring touchdowns over a cornerback, which I think we equally need both of them.
I like it. I like it. So I think that what you've done for me here is say, that's the way I'd like to phrase this. Like, what's the priority for everybody, right? You say wide receiver, because you can't go out and just trade for a whole bunch of players and have a new roster. It's not going to happen. So wide receiver. Now, I do want to push back on one thing, Mike. I'm on the sidelines every game, as you know. I would definitely push back and say that Josh isn't into the game. Like, when he comes off the sidelines, the first thing he does is go talk to his position coach and grab a tablet and sit down and look what's going on. You may get a shot of him on TV, and he's looking down because he's looking at a tablet. He's looking to see. Like, they're trying to fix things after every series. So I don't think he's not into the game in any sense whatsoever. I think he's very into the game. You know?
Yeah, that might be the case. They're just catching him in a spot where he's looking confused and frazzled and frustrated, and it's just – I know the other fans are thinking that's perception, and maybe that's not. That's just how they're portraying it on TV. But I got to keep him involved. I don't know the last time I've seen him smile, really, and just be on the sideline. And they haven't shown it on TV. But I got to keep him involved, and I just got to keep that offense moving. But with that said, with some of the wide receivers, they have to go after younger talent. I would see, like, Chris Olave would be a guy. I even would go as far as to say Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know.
I heard you say that. Didn't you? Did you call the last show and say that?
I did, yes.
Yeah, and I just say, look, that's a pipe dream, Mike. It really is. It's unrealistic. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals aren't trading you Marvin Harrison Jr. It's just not happening. And if you want to give up a couple first-round picks maybe and dangle that, but it's just those are things that just aren't happening. But I agree with you. Younger talent at wide receiver, how do you get it? You draft them, though. That's how you get those guys. Let's go to Steve in Tampa. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Sal. I'm a Penn State alum, so between Penn State, the Bills, and the Sabres, it's been a rough couple weeks for me here. So I was actually texting with a friend on Monday night, and I jokingly said to him, you know, what if Sean McDermott is just NFL James Franklin? And afterwards, I kind of got to thinking there's a little similarity there, right, between the two of them. They both stepped into programs that were in really rough spots. They built them up. They got them into that national relevance, and they both have a pretty safe floor, I'd say, right, season to season, and kept you in that national conversation. But we just saw with Franklin, you know, there kind of came that point where there was less and less, I would say, goodwill with the fan base for not being able to get over the hump.
Right, but Steve, the question is, Steve, you want this now? Like, you want this after six games of 2025?
No. What I want to ask you is, do you think we're on that same path? What's the tipping point, do you think?
I don't know, because I'm not the owner, right? And the owner would be the person that has to make that decision. The owner, yeah. And for me, from every indication I've ever gotten, like, the owner believes that he has a really good coach here, and that's not going to happen. Now, that being said,
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't answer that. Maybe a season where you miss the playoffs without, you know, having major injuries.
Right.
If it happens, if you get to where you've been the last few years and it ends the same way, maybe that's it. I don't really know what the tipping point is, but it's not happening after 6 weeks of 2025. Let's go to Matt in Hamburg. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good morning, Sal. I just had two quick things. One, I'm not in the fire everybody camp. I think we have a lot of good things going on in Buffalo, but I do think that we are potentially staring down the barrel at having Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, and Gabe Davis all on the field for us in starting roles. Mm-hmm. And that just seems like a 3-year setback. And the other part of what I was going to say, so I mean, something needs to be done about that, but the other,
Where would you concentrate first?
You know what? Honestly, I do go back to, I got to trust Bean, but it's hard to say if he keeps investing in the defense because he's covering up for a bad, and that's why maybe he doesn't focus on receiver. I don't know what our fix is this year, but that'll bring me into the second part of what I was going to say. With our schedule, with the Chiefs and Ravens getting off to the starts that they got off to.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to sell out like the Rams did years ago, but we need to make an aggressive move. We need to do something. The most success we've ever had at wide receiver was when we did make such a bold move for Diggs, and that was awesome for years until, honestly, he got a little older and lost a step. And then we
The issue with that, though, Matt, is you did that in the offseason, right? That's something you do in the offseason. It wasn't something that happened during the season. If you want to do something now, and I'm not saying – I know what you're saying, and maybe you're saying that. They do it the offseason. Yeah. But you know, people want answers now, and I agree with you. You kind of have to think about – I agree with you that the schedule, the way it's set up, where you are, now is the year, right? Now is the year. And to be aggressive, I mean, to go to – you wait to the offseason, you're past that point. And I think that's where the issue lies. And that's where the, I guess, complication is. Let's go to another Steve. There's one in Texas. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Sal. I talked to you a few weeks ago before the New England game, and it was like, you know, if they drop that game, and I don't know if you remember it all, I was like, oh, boy, we're going to go down there, and that game's going to be for the division. I sure am kind of sad that actually looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, we all said the same thing. We knew that would be the case, and here we are a couple weeks later.
Yeah, but
So what do you think now?
Yeah, I think now I'm with McDermott and Brady. I'm really hoping they can just, you know, evolve just a little bit more. And the thing that just really concerned me about this game was that punt from midfield. Considering we know the defense is having trouble. And I think that was if I don't get this fourth down, this game could be over and I'm going to punt it back. But sometimes I think that, you know, you need to keep.
Which punt are you talking about? Second half? Are we talking second half? The one after Elijah Moore's play?
No, the first half punt when it was fourth and three and they were around midfield.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, when you say, here's the thing, here's the issue I have sometimes, Steven. This is not a shot at you at all. I just want to ask you. When you say evolve, what do you mean? Because actually, I mean, I can sit here and people could think that I'm crazy, but I'm not. But when I say, like, Sean McDermott is actually very, very atop of, like, the, the numbers on when to go for it, when to, like, he is actually very good at those things. When you say evolve, what do you mean?
I think evolve is, you know, when you're in that spot, I mean, I know there's the numbers, but the numbers are taking the league averages and not the fact that we still have Josh Allen as our quarterback. I think from that spot, you know, Dan Campbell's going there. And I think that's playing not to lose, is punting from that spot. And you're showing your quarterback that he's got to do something special on third down, because you don't trust him to go pick it up on fourth. If he gets short, and Josh won't take a check down, because if somebody gets fourth and one and they don't pick that up, McDermott's not going to go for it. I think that's showing that you're not confident in your quarterback.
Okay, I'm looking now. It looks like there's a fourth and six here, maybe, that they punted in the first half. I mean, there's a – okay, here we go. Wisnowski, fourth and three from the Bills 49. Sure, you could go for it there. That's fine. I will tell you this, though. You go for it there and you miss. I hope you don't call up and say, I can't believe they gave the game away right there.
No, because they're – you know, the game's already getting away from you in that spot.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point.
Right. Okay, I get it. It's fine, Steve. It's one decision. I'm just saying, like, when you say evolve, like, this coach has actually really, really evolved since he's become the head coach. It's one decision you disagreed with. It's one decision you disagreed with, and I get it, and that's fine. And you can disagree with that all you want, and doesn't mean you're wrong. And it's fourth and three. Maybe they should have gone for it there. I'm looking at it now. Actually, that was fourth and six. No, wait. That was it. Yep, that was fourth and three. That was after the Josh Palmer. That was Josh Palmer was the last series before that. Sorry, but I'm just trying to figure it out here, just so we're on the same page. DJ in Lockport, what's up, DJ?
Hey, first off, I'm still optimistic about the team. They're still going to figure some things out, but we've had these lulls before, so I'm not, like, you know, pulling my hair out thinking it's all over and done with and blow it all up. But my call is, I kind of want to look back and really see how great Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer really were for this team, because I feel like every defensive struggle we had kind of folded over into the next year. But back when we had those two guys in their prime, it seemed like it didn't really matter. Milano was great, too, and Bernard came in was good. But, like, all the same issues we kind of see right now are happening without having two, you know, stud safeties back there keeping mm-hmm. everything in front of them. And it just goes to show that Bean can find these guys. It's just a matter of, can we find a couple more? And I do have confidence we do. I kind of don't like the fact that he's so ingrained in his job. And the reason why I say that is because he's not going to go out and just give up the two first-round picks to go get a good player, because he's not going to say, you know, if this doesn't work out, I won't be here to deal with it anyway type thing. But all I keep thinking is, man, those guys were really great when we had them, and I hope we can find a couple more guys to fill their shoes, because I feel like that's a big part of McDermott's defense, is not having those stud safeties back there doing what they always did. So I'll hang up and listen, and have a great day, Sal.
Okay, thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. A couple things on this. Number one, it was DJ. Hyde and Poyer were signed before Bean became general manager. They were signed after Sean McDermott became head coach, and then Brandon Bean became general manager later that year. I just want to clarify that, you know, timeline there when you said that he found them or whatever, however you phrase that. Number two is, and I know you're just DJ kind of, you know, maybe exaggerating a little bit, and that's fine, but there aren't very many trades mid-season where any team gives up two first rounders for the greatest studs on other teams. It just doesn't happen, right? Like, again, like, you have to deal in reality of how it works. Now, that could happen in the offseason, and maybe you could find it. You could say, no, Sal, a team did this. Maybe. I guess it could happen somewhere. I don't remember in the season those kinds of deals happening very often. I think the Rams might have did some a couple years ago with somebody. I have to go back and look. Was that Vaughn? What did they trade for Vaughn when they got him? Maybe that was something along those lines. But good start to the show. We're going to take some more calls before we get to George Halkovich, the third, the head coach of UB Men's Basketball. That comes your way at 10:40. But more of your calls on how do you want to prioritize the changes? What changes do you want the Bills to make? And how do you want to prioritize that? Here, next, on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're getting calls from all around the country. Thanks a lot for tuning in here to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Jim is in Connecticut. What's up, Jim?
Hey, Sal. Real quick before I ask my question, I don't know if you remember before the New England game, I came up to you and said my son went to school with Carl Jones. He's a news anchor in Rochester.
I do remember that, and Carl's a great guy. Yes, I remember talking to you about that. Your son is in Rochester also doing sports.
Yeah, he's at News 10. Yep.
Got it.
Anyway, question for you, and I'm going to reverse this. since you're really in deep, you know everything about what's going on with the Bills circuit, what would you do today based on where they're at?
Well, I'd make a couple calls. I don't know everything that's going on. I try to be as up to date, but you know what I mean by, you know, I don't know what conversations Brandon Bean is having behind closed doors, but I think they should look into getting someone who can help out on the outside speed-wise. I would call the New Orleans Saints about Rashid Shaheed. That could also help you in the return game, because right now Brandon Codrington's been inactive a couple times and he's not giving you a lot of juice. If you can get a guy like that, a guy that can help out in the return game, but also give you some speed and juice on the field in situations where a team has to watch out, that's the kind of guy I would target. That's a specific name, but something like that. On the back end, there are some free agent safeties available. I think safety is a tough one because there is a lot of complications with systems and understanding and onboarding guys. Justin Simmons is still a free agent. I don't know, Jordan Whitehead. I don't know if I'd even bring these guys in, but you have to look around and see, and then maybe you make a call or two. What's the pipe dream? Maybe Jeffrey Simmons, defensive tackle from Tennessee. That would be the pipe dream, right? There you go.
Cool. Thanks.
You got it. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Let's go to Peter in Buffalo. Hi, Peter.
Hi,
Peter, you're on the air, buddy.
Great.
Good.
Great show. Hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Can you hear? Oh, okay. A couple things. One, I'm done with the everybody eats because it's obvious that Josh needs a speed threat and a number one. And the other thing is, I'm really concerned about the play calling. If you looked at the scouting report on Atlanta, they were terrible at they weren't good against the run, and they weren't good at covering the backside of the backfield. And we went away from that. We threw maybe two passes that were very successful to the running back, and then Cook was getting yardage. And then at the end of the game, you got the last three drives, you don't have Cook getting the ball. That's the same thing that happened in the playoffs last year. Cook didn't get the ball at the end of the game. And I just don't understand the play calling. Your best player's off the field. They didn't even throw a swing pass to Cook, did they?
No, I think they kept running backs in a little bit more because of all the blitzing the Falcons were doing. But, you know, I think that there is a counter there to throw to the running backs more. I don't know why Ty Johnson's not more involved in the passing game either. He was so good at it, you know. And I don't disagree with you as far as the game plan from Atlanta. It just didn't seem like it was the right approach against a team like that to get those guys involved, and totally understand. Let's go to Chase and Clarence. Hi, Chase.
Hey, Sal. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
So I just wanted to talk about the receiver, and I'd love to see the Bills get one. I just look at recent Super Bowl winners and like the Rams and Philly and see these teams go all in their Super Bowl window and trade first round picks and push money down the line to bring in really good players. And just want to see your thoughts of the Bills actually doing that, like going all in this year with an easy.
What is all in? What does all in mean to you? Like what do you envision when you say that, Chase?
Trade your first round pick, trade your next two first round picks.
Wow.
Okay,
now, in order to do that, though, somebody has to be available on a team that has a receiver that good, right? So that means a team that's probably not contending somewhere, a team that's not that good. So I don't know. It's great. It's a great thing to think about and have a, you know, and theorize, but I just don't know where you're getting a guy like that.
Yeah, Olave was my thought for it. Who knows if he's even available or not, but just anybody, just even if it's a safety or a corner, just trying something to go all in and not saving the picks for our future.
I don't think it's even necessarily about saving picks. I just think it's about availability and ability to do things like this sometimes. Yeah, picks matter, and Brandon Bean loves his picks, just like every GM does. Olave, by the way, is in the final year of his deal. He would be a great guy to add for any team, no doubt, and maybe that's something. I don't know how much that would cost. But that's a pretty, pretty, pretty hefty price to pay. And if you think about it, you know, you get a guy like that, he could be a free agent. You are losing that first round pick or even more, as you say. I'm not against bringing in talent like that. I just don't know what team that's not contending has a high enough level talent to say to you, yep, we're just going to give you that guy. When that team, you know what that team might think? Hey, that's a guy that we want to rely on to help turn us around, you know, going forward. It's not that easy. I'm with you, though. I'm with you, man. Like, Chase, go out, go all in. This is the year to do it. To me, this is the year to do it. Go all in. If there is a move to be made like that, then go do it. I'm with you on that. I'm very skeptical if there would be a move to make like that, is my point. All right, good stuff here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And taking your calls is getting connected with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Sabres have a game tonight downtown against the Ottawa Senators, looking for their first, not only win, first lead of the season. Paul Hamilton's going to join us at 11 a.m. But before we do that, we're going to have George Halkovich on. He is the head coach of the UB men's basketball team. They are in an exhibition a week from Saturday at home against Syracuse. Adrian Autry, head coach at Syracuse, going to join me at 11:30. We're going to preview it, talk about it with both head coaches, and get you ready for that exhibition, which is pretty cool to have that kind of game coming to Buffalo, New York here next Saturday before the actual season tips off. George Halkovich, the third head coach, UB men's basketball, on the way next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A week from Saturday, University at Buffalo men's basketball team will take on Syracuse at KeyBank Center. That will be a 7 p.m. start. Damon against Nazareth at 3:30 p.m. Exhibition college basketball is here, and that's because the regular season is right around the corner. So, great, great time to talk with George Halkovich III, the head coach of the UB men's basketball team, who joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good morning, coach. How are you? Good to talk to you. Last time I saw you, you were in the airport. We ran into each other, and you were on the recruiting trail. So now you can be settled in and coach basketball. Good morning.
No doubt. Good morning, Sal. It's great to be on with you. Really excited about, obviously, our season getting underway and getting to be in live action with hopefully a big-time crowd down at KeyBank against Syracuse, against a really tough opponent and well-coached team. So we're fired up. And, yeah, it's great to be off the road and more spending more time in the gym with our guys. But I think they're sick and tired of playing each other. They're ready to play somebody else.
Totally get that. Third year as the men's head basketball coach here at the University of Buffalo, from 4 wins to 9 wins. Nice improvement there. But what do you guys need to do to take the next step for UB this year?
Yeah, I think, as everybody knows, the landscape of college athletics has shifted dramatically in the last 5 years, right? So, with NIL, revenue share, so on and so forth, the biggest thing is being able to have the resources you need to go out and compete, right? And not, everybody can rebuild a roster and compete right away based off of the resources they have. And I feel like, we've been able to go into this year have the resources necessary to put together a really competitive roster. And that's where we're at right now in our, in our timeline here at Buffalo. And I'm fired up because, I think we have a depth and guys that are ready right now to go in and take on anybody on a given night. So, that's just it. You kind of got to live in the moment and know, this keeps changing every day right now in college athletics. Yeah. And you kind of got to be able to, pun intended, you got to be able to pivot, right? So hopefully we can jump stop and pivot against the, against the Orange next week.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you're right at the right, time period of a coach where you've lived through both sides of it here, which is, how recruiting used to be without NIL and now the change that just came so swiftly. For you, what's that change been like? And do you have to kind of embrace it or you'll be left behind? It seems like the coaches who are fighting back against it are the ones that kind of just are saying, okay, this isn't for me, where the coaches who are embracing it are the ones that are maybe thriving a little bit.
Yeah, no. When I was at Villanova, right, before I got here, we embraced it immediately. We had to.
Yep.
We were at a level where we were able to go to, deep in the NCAA tournament, make Final Fours. In order to sustain that, you had to do it. You had no choice, right? So I think my perspective then immediately changed and understood, okay, this is just what the reality is going to be moving forward everywhere. And then, when you get here, you got to kind of understand the landscape here and, have some patience for us to build it to where we have it today. And I think we're only growing it. We have Turner battle back as a GM here. We're building our infrastructure here at Buffalo to allow us to now be competitive in this new landscape, doing it our way, right? So I think it's all about embracing it, knowing where you're at, and then also being able to, you know, with the resources, you still got to go out and recruit differently, right? You got to make roster construction decisions that are, all right, how does my team work this year? And then you might have to go and do the same thing again the next year with different guys, but try to stick to your core values, right? So I still believe you have to have culture, and that's something we've been keen on the last couple of years is installing and implementing our culture. And then fitting the right pieces in with resources is what we've been doing now to go out and compete night in, night out. So that's just what it is. And yeah, you got to love what you do. And you got to, if you're going to coach now, you got to love being able to hopefully get some money into the players' pockets while they're in college.
One of the big things we always hear from coaches now, Coach, is retention of players. You have a couple of guys you've been able to retain who are going to be big parts of your program this year. Ryan Sable, Noah Batchelor. Tell us a little bit about those guys returning and what they mean to your program.
Yeah, to have a guy in his third year and Ryan with us is, you know, who's led us in scoring, who knows everything we do, who can help talk to some of these guys that are here for the first time. Why we do the things we do is invaluable. Same thing with Noah coming back for a second year with us, a guy that I recruited a little bit when he was, you know, coming out of high school when I was at Villanova. And then now him coming here, understanding what we do at a higher level through a year, being able to be a guy that was counted on last year and then ready to make that next step and lead as an older, experienced player, right? Those guys are invaluable. So having those two guys back along with Tim Oboe and Omar McGee-Sabelich, who are both, I think, can have nice jumps in their sophomore year. I think Tim Oboe has got a chance to really just go to another level as a big man, right? Having four guys, three of them that started the majority of our games is really a key still to build some continuity around new pieces coming together.
When you go on the recruiting trail, what is your biggest selling point of why you sell guys on coming to the University of Buffalo to play for the Bulls?
I think number one, obviously, it's an unbelievable sports town, as you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. It's, you know, you got the Bills. People are obsessed with the Bills here. I came from Philly before this. The same thing is with the Eagles, right? So, yep. I tell people, I'm like, the Bills, like, people give up their inheritances just to go to Bills games. It's unbelievable here, right? I love it.
Yeah.
And the passion is so cool. But to have that kind of passion, you know, the Sabres, you know, we don't have pro basketball here. So my whole thing is if we keep doing it the way, you know, and getting it to where we can get it to where it was when Coach Oates, Coach Hurley, and Coach Spoon, they all had great teams. You know, Coach Weitzel had great teams here. If we could get it back to where we're selling out Alumni Arena, where there's proof of concept, you could do it, and then you could go compete nationally, it's going to be a place people want to play. And I think that, you know, when you have a great sports city and a town that loves sports and rallies behind their team, you know, that's an unbelievable environment to play your college basketball and experience it in. So that's what we're selling, and we still tell them, like, hey, we're going to push you no matter how long you're here. To be the best player, the best student. We got a great institution. You're going to get academically pushed, and then you're going to be pushed to be the best man you could be while you're with us. And I think that's our job still, right? These guys are in college. Are they going to make some money? Yes. Do we want them to be able to benefit from that? Yes. But we also want them to benefit from the experience of being pushed to be the best player, student, and man they could be with us.
George Halkovich the III joining us here on the Wester Hotline. University of Buffalo men's basketball team takes on Syracuse a week from Saturday, exhibition at KeyBank Center before their regular season tips off. We just talked about a couple of the returning guys. You mentioned a couple of the other guys, but who else on your roster can people get familiar with that you're excited about watching and growing and being a part of this team this year?
Yeah, so I think the one thing, we were able to get older and more experienced, right? But we also were able to get some really, I think, some guards that could really take us to another level. Two of them being Daniel Freitag, a transfer sophomore this year from Wisconsin, you know, had a great, was a top 100 recruit coming out of high school.
Yeah.
And then I think he's going to really help us right away. I mean, he's just a dynamic guard that could score at all three levels. I mean, he's a high major athlete, right? And then the other one is Angelo Brizzi, who's a fifth year guy who actually played for us at Villanova, redshirted for a year and played for us at Villanova way back, who's now here with us as a fifth year. Another guy who I think gives us a high major body, who's older, experienced, he's been through battles, he's battle tested, And both those guys, to put them together at Ryan Sable are just going to alleviate a lot. And then, you know, the other guys off, you know, we really tried to have a balance of our roster where we have, you know, guys off the bench coming in that can to play that could also play big roles, where we have two NIAA transfers that played 4 years at NIAA with DJ Talton, Derek Talton Jr., as well as Ezra McKenna, a guard, a dynamic guard like DJ who could change the game defensively coming in the game, and then Ezra, like a five-man who could go inside and out for us, who's, again, a guys that won a lot of games at the NIAA level. They were both All-Americans. And, you know, like I said, you know, then other guys, more freshmen or D2 transfers that are taking a jump up. You know, all of them, we don't know yet because we haven't gone against anybody, but I feel like there could be another guy with, like, you know, we have Mikael Pocknet here who had a really good D2 career. Kyle Jones, another guy who came from St. Thomas Aquinas to us. Guys that have played in big-time games at that level taking the step up. So we love our experience, and, you know, obviously we have some freshmen that are going to get some time too. So right now we're just trying to figure it out, and then, you know, next week will be a great test for us as we go into our first official game on November 3rd.
One of the things that's changing college basketball is teams and schools hiring general managers. And you guys brought one in that's very familiar with the UB fan base and here in Buffalo. Turner Battle, one of the most decorated players in UB men's basketball history. What does it mean to have Turner on staff? What does he provide for you?
I mean, he's going out, and obviously he's so connected to this community. Obviously was one of the best players ever to play here. Names in the rafters now, jersey retired. So having that guy as a not only just the man he is and the example to our players every day about, hey, this guy not only played here and was one of the best players here, went into coaching, his pro career got cut short because of injury, went into college coaching, did that. Now he's back here in Buffalo, you know, married a Buffalo girl, and they're back here. They put their roots here. He wants this to succeed so badly for us in this new age of college basketball. And to be able to have him out in the community trying to raise money for us, going out and trying to make the connections we need to get everybody to understand here that we want to be current in this landscape, is you can't find a better person to do that, right? Who also is going to take such pride because he wore the jersey for 4 years and was such a stud, right? So to have him not only in the community, but also to be able to have him with our players to say, hey, you know, look, Turner could tell you he went through the same things, and for him to be able to lend that value to them, you can't put a price tag on that. So it's been every day I pinch myself to be able to say, man, we got Turner Battle on staff with us. This is just awesome.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Some people may not be as familiar with George Hukovich, and you know, what do you like to do when you're not coaching basketball and get a little downtime and family time?
Well, I love my family. Obviously, I'm a big family guy. Grew up in Pottsville, PA, which I think is like, it's coal region. It's, you know, an hour and a half from Philly, but it's more outside of Philly than Philly, right? And, you know, Home Yuengling beer. And so everybody there we have a saying here, all in grit. I think grit is in your DNA if you grew up in Pottsville. And I think that's very similar to how people in the city of Buffalo operates, right? So the community of Buffalo really resonates with me because of how I grew up, right? And, you know, my wife, Lizzie, and my little guy, Colin, you know, we were pregnant with him when we got the job here. So he's a Buffalonian, right? Yeah. So it's funny. Just spending time with them, you know, he loves all the sports and all the different things. You know, it's just so great to have him and spend time with him and Lizzie any chance I get. So, and then if, you know, in the off season, if I get a little time, I like to hit the golf course and
I love it.
Try to decompress. I mean, that's really it. Yeah. I'm pretty simple. You know, I love pizza. I love Italian food, you know, and, you know, I like a good steak, right? It's pretty straightforward there. And, you know, if I have any free time, I'd like to talk about basketball a lot.
Well, listen, you're in a great area for all of that, as you know. Your counterpart on the football side, Pete Lembo, is a big 80s guy. He's a big retro guy, right? What about you? What's the TV show? You watch any good series or shows lately? Something you're like, you know what? I sat down and watched that. It was pretty darn good.
So you'll love this because this speaks to what I like to do in our free time. And, what okay. You know, when you have a young one, they dominate your time. So now my son's able to convey what he wants. And, you know, we were on a family trip driving in the summer and it was a long drive. I said to my wife, like, look, we don't really do a lot of screens with them. But let's try to see if we could give them the screen. And we put on Space Jam, the original with Michael
yes.
Jordan.
Yes.
Right. So 90s, right? So obviously yeah. we put it on and this dude literally watched it twice. And ever since then, he's obsessed with it. I think
it.
We're even we're dressing him up like he's a member of the Toon Squad for Halloween. So, yeah, the funny thing is he'll talk to me about Michael Jordan. He'll knows all the characters' names, all the old players' names, Patrick Ewing, Muggsy Bogues.
Yes.
Just talks nonstop. So right now I'm on a big explaining to my son the history of Michael Jordan, also while doing, you know, What's Up Doc to him when he wants to laugh and talk about Bugs Bunny. So, you know, no, that's really what my time is right now, right outside of dealing with our staff, talking about what we need to do on a daily basis. You know, being around my son and seeing him grow, like, honestly, is really what dominates my time. You know, that's it, man. Other shows I watch, you know, let me think here. I just started Tulsa King, you know, so on my
free time, I get a chance. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, so Sly Stallone and... You know, every once in a while I try to catch a show, but it's hard to catch up right now.
And then you have all these episodes you haven't watched yet, right? I'm the same way with Severance. I started watching Severance. I got into like two or three episodes into season two, and I don't think I've watched it in like 2 months. I'm like, when can I watch this again? I don't even know if I have time to watch this darn thing. All right, last one before I let you go here, another fun one. All right, so you're driving around, you got your music on whatever you use, your iPhone, your pod, whatever. You hit shuffle. George Halkovich hits shuffle. What is the most likely artist or band to come up in your music playlist?
Wow. The Chainsmokers.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
That's probably
like
my, oh yeah. Yeah. Just the older Chainsmokers stuff, right? The, you know, Closer, all that stuff. All their great, you know, old hits, probably the ones that come up the most right now. And then, you know, again, like with my son, it's like, honestly, the most played on repeat. And I don't mean to, you know, we are Eagles fans. I love the Bills. Coach McDermott, I'm such a huge fan of him. They're my AFC team. But diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan. I'd be not allowed to go home ever, just like the people from Buffalo disown the Bills, right? So that's kind of how I have to manage it, right? So the Fly Eagles Fly song. Which my son plays on repeat all the time.
Rocky, yeah.
You guys probably playing Shout right here. Uh-huh. And then the other one is the Space Jam, you know, Welcome to the Space Jam. It's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right. That is,
I love it.
Literally, I hear that when I'm in practice sometimes. My son wants to play it on repeat so much. My wife's probably going through it worse with him every day.
I am not above personally, Coach, putting on the Fly Eagles Fly song, like the Rocky theme, and I like while I'm at the gym, like, cause I wanna feel like I'm Rocky running up the steps sometimes just to get me involved. I'm this Italian guy at the gym, and I'm like, I gotta put this song on just to make me feel good.
No doubt. Then all of a sudden you have headphones on and you yell Adrian, everybody's looking at you like, what's wrong with this dude, right?
I love it. Hey, listen, best of luck to you this year. Let's catch up again. This was fun. I love it. Awesome. And again, one more time, next Saturday, Syracuse UB exhibition game at KeyBank Center. That's at 7 p.m. Damon against Nazareth, our buddy Mike McDonald and Damon, they're going to be playing an exhibition game there as well. Good luck to you this year, Coach. This was fun and I appreciate you doing it.
Thanks, Sal. Looking forward to seeing all of our Bulls fans out there next weekend. Appreciate you.
All right, you got it. That is George Halkovich III. Fun conversation right there with him. We will talk with Syracuse head basketball coach Adrian Autry. Red, he's going to join me at 11:30. So we're going to cover both sides of this exhibition coming up next Saturday. Unfortunately, I can't go. I'll be in Carolina because the Bills will be taking on the Panthers on Sunday at 1 p.m. That'll be the game after their bye. In the meantime, Sabres, Senators tonight. Paul Hamilton on the way next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Well, I was also going to ask Paul Hamilton if put on his like music selection on his pod or his phone, what the most likely band or artist was going to come up either. And I thought, I don't know if that's appropriate to ask Paul. I don't really know what he would say. If he'd be like, wait a minute, that's kind of, but I'm going to do it anyway, just because I'm very curious. All right, Paul, let's do it. Before we get into it, I just asked George Halkovich, the head coach at UB men's basketball, if he put his iPod or his iPhone, whatever, on shuffle, what's the most likely music selection band or artist to come up? How about with you? What do you even use to listen to music, Paul? That's what I want to know.
I am all over the place. I mean, you will hear Zeppelin. You will hear Deep Purple.
Okay.
You will hear ABBA. You will hear Heart. You will hear...
I'm the same way, man.
Shania Twain.
Yes.
You will hear Little Big Town. You will hear.
Okay.
I'm just all over the place. I was a big Zeppelin fan growing up. You know, okay. The Who, Zeppelin, the Stones, you know, that type of thing growing up. And still am. I still enjoy it. You know, there's quite a bit of Zeppelin on there. But even like One Hit Wonders you might find on my, you know, on my there too. If I hear a song, I'll write it down. And then when I'm downloading music, I'll get to it and put it on or something. So I'm just all over the place when it comes to that.
I'm the same way, Paul. Very eclectic music selection and taste, no doubt about it. I love that from you. Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline, and his appearance, of course, as always, brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Well, Paul, obviously the Sabres are searching for their first win of the season after an 0-3 start, but heck, they're searching for their first lead of the season. They just can't seem to score a goal, many goals, and they can't get out front. What is the team saying about trying to fix their scoring woes right now?
And that's the crazy part about it, is not only have they lost 3 in a row, but as you mentioned, they have not even had the lead in any game. And that's unheard of. I mean, that just makes it even worse, in my opinion, that, you know, the Colorado was just here. They have two players after that game who have 8 points each.
Oh, my God.
Buffalo has
scored 2 goals. I didn't realize that. That's crazy.
McKinnon and Natchez both have 8 points after that game. And Buffalo has 2 goals. I mean, it's that kind of puts it in perspective for you how bad this start has been for the Buffalo Sabres. And, you know, at least the Colorado game, you saw spurts of pretty good hockey, especially in the first period. Like, I just asked Lindy, we just spoke with him. It's like the Thompson line. They put Thompson back at center with Tuck and Doan. First period, they were around the crease the whole period and almost scored a couple of times. Thompson had a wide open net on a rebound, and the puck bounced on him, and he couldn't settle it. They were there, and the reason they had these opportunities, they were there, but then it ended. And it's like, well, the hockey game is 60 minutes. It's not just 20. You know, then guys weren't around the net as much as they should have been. And that's the thing that they have to get going here. Ruff talked about faceoffs. Yeah, they were counting on Norris to do that. But he said a guy like McLeod, he was over 50% last year. He's down in the 30s. I don't know what's happened to Ryan McLeod. Lindy Ruff said he basically has been on the wrong side of the puck in both zones, the offensive zone and the defensive zone. But he is as good as he was last year as how bad he was this year. And that's one thing Ruff wanted to stress. First, he wouldn't tell us if Kulik was going to play yesterday in practice. Kulik was on a line with, like, Gertsen and Greenway. He wasn't even on a regular line. Obviously sending a message to him. And as he said yesterday, that's not good enough, what we have seen from him. And a lot of fans were like, well, why are they just picking on him? Well, you only have 23 on the roster. You can't bench 8 guys. And Ruff was very careful to talk about that today. First, he wasn't going to tell us, and then he said, all right, I'll tell you, Kulik's playing. But he said, this isn't all on Kulik, and I want to stress that. He goes, there are a lot of other people who could be in the same boat. And he goes, I have had discussions with many of them, including McLeod. And so, you know, he wanted to see how Kulik would respond. He goes, I didn't talk to him yesterday because I wanted to see how he responded to what was happening to him in practice. And he must have liked the response he saw because he's going to be in the lineup today against Ottawa.
Paul, today, Lindy was on the morning show with Jeremy and Joe. I really enjoyed listening to him because he sounded like, I mean, he was energized. It wasn't like in a mean tone. It was more of a sense of urgency. And what I got from him was when he was talking about guys stepping up and when there's opportunity for you to take hold of that, it really felt to me like, and I know coaches do this sometimes, I don't normally get this from Lindy, it really felt like he was sending a message to his room and those guys through our show, through WGR and through Jeremy and Joe, the way he was talking.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, I had Yuri Kulik for the pregame show last game, and one of the things we talked about is this being an opportunity for him. You know, with Josh Norris out a couple of months, I mean, Kulik can jump into that number one center slot or number two center slot if Thompson slides over to center and stays there, which he was at center the last game. But last year, Kulik did take advantage of it. He actually excelled and got better, when they moved him to center, and he was playing with Thompson, and things were going well for him. And but you know, he, along with most of the other players, have just not been there whatsoever in the first three games. It has to be better. You can't rest on your laurels and say, well, you know, last year I got better and I've had a really good second half of the season and they were counting on me in all situations. And, you know, this is hopefully for him a learning experience at a very young age. And you'll see a different Yuri Kulik in this game against the Ottawa Senators. But this, you know, with an injury to Norris, he can take control here. He can make, you know, make it show Lindy Ruff, hey, whether Norris is in the lineup or not, I belong in the top six. And that's what I was drafted to do. And that's what I was developed to do in Rochester. And it's his job to show Ruff that, hey, I can be part of that top six for a long time to come.
Paul Hamilton on the West Hur Hotline. All right, Paul, we just talked about the Sabres not having a lead. The Rangers, they have no goals in any of their first three home games. First team in NHL history to accomplish that unfortunate feat, which is they've not scored a goal in their first three home games to start a season. I bring them up because they come to Buffalo. They're all over the Sabres in the first period in the opener. Alex Lyon kind of saves them, but they do wind up with four goals that night. How about on the back end? What have you seen from really, the mantra has been from Lindy, we got to make sure that we keep pucks out of our net. We got to play better at the blue line. It felt like they were very, very confident in being able to do that. But what have you seen from that group so far this year?
Well, that was basically a 1-0 boring game until very late.
Yep.
In that game. It was both teams were cutting off chances. The Sabres were playing pretty well defensively. Lyon was playing pretty well. The Sabres just had to find their feet after maybe the first half of the first period. Did that. It really limited the chances. I'm thinking back. I believe it was four or five shots they gave up. Excuse me, in the second period, and didn't give up very many chances. But the Rangers were doing the same thing. They were cutting off the Sabres. I mean, think about it. They got 37 shots on Shesterkin. Did he really have to make all that many difficult saves? I mean, he didn't stand on his head by any means.
No.
He just made the saves he had to make.
He saw everything cleanly.
Right.
Everything.
Right. The Sabres weren't around the net. He made the saves that he had to. No goofy goal went by him. And so that it was more an offensive output. They got the second. It was a giveaway by Krebs near the end of the third period. That was the second goal, and they wound. And then a tip in was the third, a minute later, and then they got an empty netter. And the same thing in Boston. As bad as they played in Boston, and they were horrendous, especially in the first period, skiing out shots 17-2. The whole period was in their end. Until 3 seconds were left in the game, it was still a 2-1 game. I mean, they could have scored with the goaltender pulled and gotten points out of that game. And that brings us to another point. They got to find a way to get points in that game. Even though they played poorly, by the end of the game, there they are sitting there with 5 minutes left down a goal. You got to find a way to get points in a game like that, even though you didn't play your best. Good teams come away in that game with points. And that's why they're good teams. And, you know, they couldn't do that. And then the empty netter was with 3 seconds left. So, you know, they gave up three goals in that game, one an empty netter. They were horrendous, but Lyon was fantastic, and they still basically were playing a 2-1 game. So, really, what are we talking about here? They pretty much could be 3-0 just as easily as they're 0-3 if a couple of things went their way or they played a little bit better offensively, because they've been sitting in these games one goal down for a lot of the game.
The Sabres are one of three teams to not have a goal yet on the power play. And by the way, the other two, very interesting, the other two, the Canucks and the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs are 0-8, by the way, to start the year on the power play. The Sabres are 0-11. They've had the most chances without scoring a goal of any team in the league. 0-11 to start the power play. Paul, what is going wrong?
Any power play that has Rasmus Dahlin as its quarterback should be a phenomenal power play. And it just has not materialized since basically he's been here. I mean, with the talent that he has and the vision that he has, but it just seems like he presses on the power play and then winds up making a bad play, or he doesn't shoot enough, so they don't respect the shot because they're thinking, well, we don't have to because he's not going to shoot all that often. And they're always leaning towards Thompson, and most teams have taken Thompson away now. That's why I would have liked to, you know, one of the things with if Norris could have stayed healthy, I wonder if that power play could have come into shape with him in one circle and Thompson in the other. I wonder if that threat would have really helped develop the number one power play unit. we're not going to see that. McLeod was over there for a while. That, I don't know why. If Kulik's in your lineup, it's got to be him. He's got a cannon for a shot. You want somebody in that circle with a left-handed shot. I think, you know, if it's going to be successful, it's got to be him. But Rasmus Dahlin, maybe he's just got to calm down and not get so frustrated. He is a frustrating – I mean, look at the penalty he took late in that game in Colorado to basically take out any chance the Sabres had of coming back. It was just a stupid frustration penalty that he took. He takes those all the time. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He wants to win so badly, and he's so frustrated with the losing that then he does stupid things. And, you know, that's why I think he gets frustrated with the power play. We asked him about it the other night after Colorado game. He doesn't know what to say. It's like, we got to be better. You know, and I said, well, do you have to work harder winning battles? He goes, we've got to do everything harder. You know, I don't think he just knows what to say, but I'm baffled. Any power play that's run by Rasmus Dahlin should be a good power play.
Paul, where is this team with notable injuries right now?
Samuelson didn't skate today, but he skated on his own. Ruff said he expects he might be able to play by the weekend. It looks like Benson is playing today. I think he's going to still have to wear that plastic shield on his face. That will help, having him in the lineup. So, and if people think the Sabres have to make a move, they don't. He never wound up on IR, so he was still on the roster. So they don't have to make a move. I imagine it was optional today, so I couldn't tell. Maybe Dunn would come out of the lineup and Benson would go in. But instead of Doan on that line with Thompson and Tuck, I would imagine Benson will step in like he did in practice yesterday. And that makes another line better with Doan going to another line. Mm-hmm. If Zucker's out there with McLeod and you put Doan out there with them, I think that's going to be a very useful line. The best McLeod played is when he played with Zucker and Greenway last year. And that was an excellent line. And I think Doan's similar to Greenway and that type of a player. So I would think Benson can only help in this situation playing against the Senators tonight.
Greenway is still a little bit away, right? He came back to practice, but not.
Yeah, they just
got
to get him some practices now. I chatted with him yesterday. Folks will hear him on the pregame show. He's basically no pain, very frustrated that he had to have another surgery, that the surgery in December was not successful and they had to do it again. But he said he's in a good place right now. Practice went well. It was the first time he'd been skating. Rehab practices, but that was the first time with the team. He felt it went well. But as Ruff said, I mean, he hasn't played a game since, what is it, last December, I believe, somewhere in there. So you got to get him some practices and that type of thing. Luukkonen, don't be surprised if he winds up in Rochester for some rehab starts. He's only played one period since last April. So, you know, he was just out there now. He just left the ice from the optional morning skate. He said yesterday, too, that he was not in any pain anymore. He felt good. So I would think, and Ruff did admit that's a possibility. So I would think within the next half week to a week, you might see him head down to Rochester and get a couple of rehab starts.
And then trying to look out who else. There was one other I was going to ask you about. Oh, yeah, Kesselring. Kesselring, anything on him right now?
All Ruff said yesterday is he's improving, but you know, we have not seen him in practice or anything like that. They definitely are missing him. He hasn't played his first game as a Buffalo Sabre. He certainly would help. One thing, Ruff, and he clarified it for me yesterday, because I was a little puzzled after the game when he told me they were fatigued in the third period. And it's the third game of the year, and you haven't had a back-to-back. How the heck are you fatigued? He was talking about his top 4D. He wasn't really playing Bryson and Johnson all that much by the third period. He was rolling 4D. And he explained, he goes, it was the 4D that were starting to get fatigued, and they weren't breaking out of the zone as crisply, and that's why they were having trouble in the third period. But, hey, Johnson and Bryson, they're NHL players. If your four are getting fatigued, you dress them. You got to put them in there. If they're not good enough to be in there, good enough to be on your depth chart, then find somebody that is. But you can't just keep running out fatigued players and then, you know, having that happen. But, you know, I was glad I asked him, because it wasn't making any sense to me to hear that the whole team was fatigued. It was basically because he played the heck out of his top four defensemen.
I am looking, and I think this is right what I'm looking at. So the Sabres are 0-for-11 on the power play, They're also 11 for 11 killing penalties, though, to be honest, which is interesting.
Yeah, they are.
They're one of only four teams that have not allowed a power play goal. The others are the Bruins, the Panthers, and the Rangers.
That's crazy. They're, like, horrendous on the power play and one of the best on the penalty kill.
Yes, and it's amazing.
Have done a very good job of that. And Lyon has helped, too. You've heard the old saying that your goaltender has to be your best penalty killer. And when he's had to make a good save on the penalty kill, he has. But he makes the good save, and there's somebody there to clear the rebound. You know, the other team's not getting 2-3 kicks at the can. You know, it's like, all right, he had to make a good save from the slot, but all right, clear the rebound. Get rid of it. Get it down ice. Whatever. Matter of fact, the Sabres actually had a couple of opportunities shorthanded the other game. They had a 2-on-1 in Boston that Tuck didn't put away. And again, you get those opportunities. I know McLeod had one. You get those opportunities, a 2-on-1 shorthanded. You capitalize on that. Instead of being a goal down, you're tied. I mean, as bad as they played, that's the thing. If you just convert a chance like that or get a break or something like that, even though you're playing poorly, you could have gotten points out of these games because you were only one goal down.
Well, they're 0-3. They need some points now. No Brady Tkachuk tonight, by the way, for the Ottawa Senators as well. He's going to be out sometime.
Yeah, for over a month for him. So that Tkachuk really hurts them.
Yeah, Tkachuk and Norris, really good friends. I know that was a big deal when he was traded. But Dylan Cousins back tonight, right, obviously?
Yep.
And I know he did return last year. But, yeah, that's a big deal for them. You're right, on the Senators' side. By the way, I looked it up. In case you were curious, I don't know if you knew this or not, the longest streak to start a season without a power play goal in NHL history, 51 power plays not long ago, the 2014 Maple Leafs, the team that wound up getting Austin Matthews.
Yes, I didn't know that. That is interesting, and I don't know if you know this. The Buffalo Sabres, in their history, have never started 0-4-0.
Okay.
They have started 0-3-0, but they have never started 0-4-0.
Let's hope that doesn't happen tonight. 7 o'clock downtown. Paul, have all the coverage at PHAM1717 and WGR550.com. Thanks a lot, buddy. Have a great day.
No problem. Take care.
You got it. Joe Calley, how about that? Did you see that? The 0 for 11 on the power play, but 0 for 11 against them on the power play. Like they've killed off 11 straight penalties. They've not scored on 11 straight power plays.
No, that's the season. It's pretty remarkable. I had no idea. That's quite the stat. You can cancel it out, but you can't do it yourself. That's pretty interesting, you know?
It is. I mean, if you had to be really good at one, I would choose penalty kill more than power play.
Yeah, if you had to pick,
because
for sure.
You know what I mean? But you got to get some goals on the power play, one of three teams. And how about the Maple Leafs not scoring yet on the power play this year?
Yeah, pretty interesting. It's weird to see these, like, not shutouts, but power play shutouts and stuff like that. Like, it's just interesting. It's not what you would expect.
Rangers have not scored a goal in three straight home games to start the year. That is an NHL record, the first time that's ever happened. And the Sabres are looking for their first lead of the season. A lot of things going on. It's early, obviously, in the National Hockey League. They need a win tonight, though. And I think Lindy's, it sounds to me like the sense of urgency is really growing right now, and it should. There's no doubt about that. Okay, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, Adrian Autry, Red, he is the head coach of Syracuse University men's basketball team, and he's going to join us on the Wester Hotline. We're going to talk about the October 25th exhibition against the University of Buffalo. We just heard from George Helkovich, the third head coach at UB. Now we're going to hear from Syracuse head coach Adrian Autry after this timeout on WGR. We heard from University of Buffalo men's head basketball coach George Helkovich, the third, a little bit earlier in the program. And now we're going to hear from Syracuse head basketball coach Adrian Autry. The two teams will hook up October 25th. That's next Saturday for an exhibition at KeyBank Center in downtown Buffalo. Joining me on the Wester Hotline right now is Coach Red Autry. Coach, welcome to the program. It's Sal Capaccio here in Buffalo. Good to talk to you again.
How you doing? Good talking to you.
You too. Before I do anything, Coach, I want to tell you, I still say to this day, the shot against Missouri with a minute left in 1994 should have counted, all right? I just want you to know that.
I was watching that the other day. Yeah, it should have counted.
coach was on his knees falling, and the ball went in, and they didn't count. It should have been an and one. The game ultimately goes to overtime. You were 1 year ahead of me at Syracuse University, so I watched your career unfold and obviously followed your career path to where you are today. What's it been like for you to be a lifer pretty much at Syracuse for so long? I know you had a couple detours along the way, but really been at Syracuse for a long time under Coach Boeheim, both as a player and coach, and now the head men's basketball coach. What's that been like for you?
It's a dream come true, you know. And, you know, once I finished playing my playing days here, you know, I didn't know if I would be back, and didn't really, to be honest, it didn't really kind of cross my mind. And then as my professional career started winding down and started my family, I actually took a visit back up here and just didn't realize just how much, you know, this place, how special this place was, and how much I missed this place. And not knowing, you know, probably 3 years later that I'll be back here raising my family here and living here and working for Coach. So it's really, you know, a dream come true.
And obviously you took over Coach Boeheim just a few years ago. Team has not been to the NCAA tournament in 5 years, but a lot of optimism around the program this year, Coach. What's different about this year's program that gives you confidence you guys can take the next step?
You know, I think you know, everything, the rules changed and everything kind of, you know, as we all know, the NIL space and everything. So I think it took us some time as a university, as a program to kind of adapt and adjust to that. And I thought, you know, under John Weilhack, our leadership, our AD, he did a phenomenal job of making a quick pivot and getting us up to speed. And I think, you know, this year, you know, it is accumulation of those first 2 years that we had from, you know, a little bit of success, not the success that we expect, that we wanted the first year, but, you know, moving in the right direction. Then last year was obviously a dip. And I think, you know, this year is a combination of not only from a program standpoint, but even me from a staff and coaching and how we build things and how things need to be. I think it's, you know, that's accumulation of these last 2 years. So that's where the excitement is for me, and the excitement is for, you know, the buzz around our program right now.
I asked Coach Halkovich this when he joined me last hour. I'll ask you the same question. Is the situation with NIL and Portal, if you don't embrace it, you're going to be left behind? And this is the rules now. These are the changes. And even if you don't like it, you have to kind of embrace it, and you have to kind of roll with the times, or else you're not going to be left around.
No question. I mean, I think it's if you don't, you will be left behind. And I think every program, every school has adapted to it. You know, some quicker than others, some, you know, slowly, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, it's a fact. If you don't embrace it, you have no chance. You have no chance.
Adrian Autry joining me here on the West Her Hotline. All right, Coach, let's talk a little bit about your team. And look, I know there's a lot of players to get to, but of course, a name that everybody's going to be familiar with, the last name Anthony, Kion Anthony, commits to Syracuse University. Tell us through the recruiting process and landing Kion and what that meant to your program after obviously having Carmelo as such a big legacy part of Syracuse University.
You know, it was a well thought out process. It was really, you know, I think on both ends, you know, I know on us particularly, you know, we really had to make sure that this was going to work. And, you know, he passed the test every year. You know, he just kept getting better, and it's a credit to Kion and even talking to Mello through the process. You know, it was clear that he wanted to forge his own path. And obviously, you know, he has a great relationship with his dad. But, you know, he had to check some boxes for us, and we had to check some boxes for him. So, you know, I think it all aligned, you know, him getting better, him, you know, wanting to forge his own way, him, you know, being different, you know, him just, you know, Kion just consistently getting better each year, you know, didn't really start, never started in high school until his senior year, but he just kept going and playing on really good teams and getting better each summer. You know, I just saw the development, and again, still a ways to go, but I mean, a talented young man, but he, you know, I think the biggest thing that stood out is that he wanted to forge his own path.
And he's going to join a lineup that includes a couple of returning starters and players. J.J. Starling, a local product, obviously came back to Syracuse. And Donnie Freeman, who may be a little bit incomplete in his college career. I'm excited to see Donnie back in a Syracuse jersey. I think there's some questions that would happen. How excited are you to see those guys return to your lineup?
You know, you want to have returners, you want to have experience. I mean, again, Donnie, you know, played, you know, 14 games last year, and then, you know, he didn't finish out the end of last year. But, you know, our relationship has always been strong, so there was no worry on our end. But, you know, everyone, you let it be. But he knew what he wanted to do, and he was committed to it, and we got committed to him. And I think You know, when JJ, you know, when he finished the season out and he was committed to come back, you know, those two guys, those are our building blocks. So, you know, we went into the portal, we built this team, you know, with the incoming freshmen, you know, we wanted to build around those two guys were our starting blocks and build around those guys. So I'm excited. And again, Donnie has really worked hard, changed his body. You know, he's picked up some weight. He grew a little bit. He's moving better. You know, he's fully healthy. He had a really good summer.
Tell us a little bit about some of the other players. I know Sadiq White, obviously a high-level recruit. You get Nate Kings in as well. Tell us a little bit about and some of the fans that might be looking to forward to going next Saturday night and what they're going to see on the court from some of your players at Syracuse.
Yeah, you know, you talk about that freshman class. There's a top 10 freshman class in the country. You know, Kyan and Sadiq White. And, you know, Sadiq White is just a big-time athlete, 1% athlete, you know, NBA athlete. But he's more than an athlete. Plays with aggression, you know, is very smart, fast, team player. You know, he just brings a lot to the team on both sides of the ball. You know, you got Luke Fennell, who joined us late from Australia, 6'6 combo guard. Can really shoot the ball high, IQ. You know, you can tell he's played with older guys. Aaron Womack, obviously, is another freshman that, you know, people don't talk about, 6'6", just continually getting better. And then we brung in, you know, another freshman at the end late, Sheffy Diarra, big body guy, you know, skill, can shoot it, you know, but still is trying to, you know, adjust to the game. You know, he's from Europe, so he's still adjusting to the game. And, you know, you talk about our guys that we brung in, you know, you first got to start with the point guard, Nate George from Georgia Tech, you know, one of the best point guards, I believe, in the country. A guy that, you know, led the ACC in assists, you know, still improving from up the road in Toronto. So, you know, we're excited to have him, a guy that's a leader that can get people shots and make shots himself. So, you know, we'll start there. Nate Kings is, you know, one of the best shooters, you know, I've seen since I've been in college. You know, really excited for him. You know, not only is he a catch and shoot guy, he's a movement guy. He's got better. You know, Tyler Betts, he's another guy that, you know, that has really improved and gotten better. He's a big-time recruit coming out of high school. You know, and he had his freshman bumps. You know, people think, oh, he didn't play that much. It's hard to play as freshman. You know, it really is, you know. So, again, I thought he had a really good summer. He's improved, a guy that can shoot it. So, we got a lot of versatility. I probably, you know, William Kyle from UCLA, you know, big-time athlete. You're talking about, you know, another 1% athlete, you know, 6'9", 7'3", wingspan, great lob threat, you know, plays above the rim. Has an unbelievable motor. So, you know, we're excited. We're excited with the group.
And listen, I mean, I'm a Syracuse junkie. Heck, I remember when you were getting recruited, Coach, to Syracuse University. So I know just from an outsider looking in, for me, you said it, versatility. I love the versatility of this lineup. And that allows you to kind of move things around. How will that allow you to play the game a little bit differently and really match up as the season goes on in a tough ACC?
You know, I think when you got this type of versatility, you know, as a coach, you know, you just got to make sure you really dive into everything and make sure you put the units together that can give you the chance to be successful. And I think, you know, us, our coaching staff, that's what we're doing. We're going to use the preseason, these exhibition games and practice to continue to try to figure out, you know, the best units, because we do have a lot of talent and depth, you know, what works and try different looks.
Syracuse University head men's basketball coach Adrian Autry here on the Wester Hotline. And, Coach, obviously your counterpart over there at Syracuse in the women's side, Felicia Leggett-Jack, we're all very familiar with her here at the University of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. She's a Syracuse grad. She goes back. What's it been like watching the women's program and the success under her coming aboard over the last few years with you kind of side-by-side right there?
It's exciting. You know, she's just a ball of energy, super positive. You know, I'm sure everyone knows that. And I'm excited to watch her team this year. She's done a phenomenal job. I get a chance to watch them practice pretty much every morning. And I'm always smiling and excited to watch her teams play. They play hard. They play with passion. They play together and they're tough. So sure, you know, things that you guys remember, you know, her teams would be, you know, it's the same here. So it's been fun. Again, she's from here. So, you know, this is, you know, more than a job for her. You know, she loves this place and, you know, we spend a lot of time together, so I'm excited for her and her team. She has a good team this year.
What do you like to do off the court, Coach? Tell everybody a little bit, get familiar with you here in Buffalo. I know you spend time with your family and all that, but what do you like to do?
Yeah, you know what? I obviously if I try to get away from basketball and watching stuff, you know, typically, you know, I try to get out there and play golf. I can't play it, but I get out there and I try, you know, in my time. So that's the one thing that I picked up as of late.
Wait, I have to ask you, can you beat Coach Boeheim though in golf? Can you do that?
No. No one can beat Coach Boeheim as long as he has a scorecard.
I love that. It's a great answer, Coach. Listen, Saturday, October 25th, UB against Syracuse in Buffalo. That's pretty cool. Then, by the way, the KeyBank Center is going to be hosting the NCAA tournament this year as well. So it's really cool. We have a lot of college basketball here in Buffalo, but this is a pretty big time event. It's going to be pretty cool to see you guys come over here, and a lot of Orange fans. There'll be a lot of UB fans. Should be a rocking crowd next Saturday. Should be pretty fun, Coach.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. You know, I'm excited for it, you know, and I know that, it'll be an exciting game, and, just excited to get in, get there and play, get our guys out. And I'm sure Coach George is ready to play somebody else too, right? We're tired of playing against each other, so this will be fun.
That's exactly what he said. He said his guys are ready to play somebody else, beating up on each other for a while.
Yeah.
No doubt. Coach, best of luck this year. I know I'm actually coming up for the football game on Saturday because this is a Bills bye week. Normally I'd be with the Bills, but I'm coming up to the football game on Saturday. It's homecoming weekend, so hopefully we can get Fran Brown and the boys to take care of Pitt this weekend as well.
Yeah. They're getting ready, so I'll be there as well, so I'm excited.
All right, Coach. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate you doing this. Best of luck this season.
Okay, take care. All right, bye-bye.
All right, you got it. That is Coach Adrian Autry from Syracuse University. Yeah, and listen, if you don't know, just look it up. It was the 1994 NCAA tournament, Syracuse against Missouri. There's about a minute left in regulation. Very close game. Adrian Autry is the point guard for Syracuse. He had a great second half in this game. Missouri was the number one seed in the bracket. He has the ball right around the foul line. He gets tripped up. He's on the ground. He throws the ball up in the air. It goes in the hoop. They wave it off, Joe. They say, no. Should have been continuation. They said the foul was on the floor before he got rid of it. He was on his knees when it happened. If that counted, Syracuse wins. But since it didn't, obviously butterfly effect, you never know. But since it didn't, they go to overtime and they lose. So, tough one. That was 1994, and they have not made the NCAA tournament in 5 years. Exhibition game Saturday at KeyBank Center. And you can go online. You can get tickets, by the way. I believe Syracuse is the host, but go online and get tickets, and you can go to KeyBankCenter.com. That's right, KeyBankCenter.com, if you want to see Syracuse take on UB. And by the way, before that, it's going to be Mike McDonald and Damon taking on Nazareth at 3:30 p.m., All right, we're going to take a time out here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program here on a Wednesday as we head you towards Sabres Live with the Sabres taking on the Senators tonight here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Hey, we are one day away from an awesome podcast event that you are invited to be a part of with me and Matt Bove. It's always game day in Buffalo. We're going to be live tomorrow night at Buffalo Old Brewery in their beer garden. It's going to be amazing and awesome. 6:30 p.m. is when the podcast starts. We're going to lead you into Thursday night football, Steelers and Bengals. You can enjoy discounts on four packs of award-winning brews like Iron Island IPA and Cloudy McCloudface Hazy IPA. Be a part of the live audience, talk football with us, discover one of Buffalo's hidden gems, Buffalo Old Brewery, 1221 East Lovejoy Street. I've been there. It's amazing. They got a stage. We're going to be on the stage. We're going to have some WGR giveaways there. It's going to be awesome. Come on by. Matt Bove and I, alive. It's always game day in Buffalo right here at Buffalo Old Brewery inside their beer garden. Again, 1221 East Lovejoy Street. That is tomorrow. We're going to be going live at 6:30. We'll do the show for about an hour, and then we're going to hang out with everybody a little bit as we lead into Thursday night football, Bengals and Steelers. All right, well, that's going to kick off your week number 7, Bengals and Steelers. Interesting. I can't imagine right now the Bengals beating them, Joe, to be honest with you. But, it is the Bengals and Steelers. You never know. Sometimes weird things happen. The AFC North, of all the divisions, might have the weirdest kind of like the Browns beat the Steelers every year once, it seems like, right? It's kind of always crazy. It doesn't matter who the quarterbacks are, or who the people are, the coaches are. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's interesting. And do you hear what they're calling this game on Thursday night?
Oh, my God. Is it well, hold on. They're two 40-year-old quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Is it the Grandpa Bowl or something?
It's the Icy Hot Bowl.
The Icy Hot Bowl. Okay. I totally get it. The Icy Hot Bowl.
It's a combined age of 80 between the two quarterbacks. It's pretty insane to even think about, but...
Do you know the last time two 40-plus-year-old quarterbacks played each other?
I could not tell you. I'm going to be honest with you. Is it recent or is it a good chunk of time ago?
Not too long ago.
Hmm.
Who would you think is a 40-year-old quarterback that would play?
Well, Tom Brady would have played somebody, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think of him? The other.
Well, it was Drew Brees.
Oh, yeah, that would do it. I forget about Drew Brees.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago, but you know, a few years ago now, obviously. Been retired for, 4 or 5 years now. So, but yeah, that's what I saw this morning. So who knows if it's right, but that's what I saw this morning. Last time two 40-plus-year-old quarterbacks met. But that's what you're going to get in Joe Flacco and Aaron Rodgers. By the way, the Steelers are 4-1, and they're atop the AFC North right now. If they win this game, I mean, they're going to be – and by the other thing is the Bengals are still in second place in the AFC North at 2-4. If they win this game, they'd be 3-4, and they'd be like 1.5 games behind Pittsburgh still. I wouldn't think they'd have a chance with still no Burrow, but it is a big game for them after starting off 2-0 because the Ravens are 1-5 and the Browns are 1-5. So, yeah, that's tomorrow night. And again, Matt Bovey and I are going to be at Buffalo Old Brewery, 1221 East Lovejoy Street. Sabres live up next. Sabres Senators tonight at 7 p.m. Thanks for being with me today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.